Welcome to Good People. I'm Elizabeth Gordon. Thanks for tuning in to Business Radio X today, where we are going to be talking about the power that people have in an organization and what smart companies do to invest in their people to increase their potential and their ability to grow, both personally as well as the company themselves. I've got a great panel of guests to have this wonderful conversation with me here in the studio today, starting with Dr. Marilyn Carroll, who is the founder and CEO of KSAP5I, a career management education company. Marilyn has a PhD in management and organization with a leadership specialization, and she's also a visiting professor to several business schools and lectures on a lot of topics having to do with career and business strategies. Marilyn, welcome to the Good People Show.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
And you have invited several of your, I guess you would say, colleagues maybe or peers in the space of human development. We've got Beth Herman here, who is the Regional Director for Manpower. Welcome, Beth,
Thank
to
you
the
so
show.
Much.
And also with us in the studio today is Rita. I'm going to have a hard time with your last name, Rita, and I feel bad. Rita Azagiri.
Izagiri.
Oh, I really missed on that one. Rita Izagiri, who is a dynamic speaker and an advocate of creating engagement via inclusion, very passionate about leveraging cultural competency to create high-performing teams. Rita, welcome. I'm curious to hear what you have to say about what good people have to do with teamwork and organizations, and we're glad to have you with us on the panel. And finally, we've got Kevin R. McGee, currently works as a business consultant for Access to Capital for Entrepreneurs, or ACE. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
What's ACE all about?
ACE is all about helping entrepreneurs gain access to capital, particularly entrepreneurs in non-traditional business sectors.
Excellent. Now, Marilyn, as a career professional and an expert in career development, you work with a lot of companies on how to maximize the potential of their people. Tell our listeners a little bit more about what a project looks like or the types of clients that you work with.
Thanks, Elizabeth. The types of clients we work with at KSAP5I are clients in traditional educational environments, colleges, universities, as well as their alumni. In addition, associations, professional services organizations who have members in their group that are looking for additional avenues as to how they can enhance their skill sets in order to maximize their talent uses. And then, in addition to that, we work with organizations who bring us in and want to capitalize more on engagement with their staff as a way of showing them the individual values within their skill sets and how they can lend those to the organization in order to enhance their ability and their growth sustainability within that organization.
Okay, so do you feel like organizations today are starting to understand the talent equation more and how that ultimately impacts their bottom line?
I think that organizations, Elizabeth, understand. However, is how you get that message out to the teammates in a way that's both economical as well as feasible for the teammate as well as for the leadership within the organization. Many times we have seen that through research especially, that many organizations want to do the right thing. They just don't have the necessary capital to move forward or the time frame to move forward and helping their teammates enhance their skill sets to be able to move up the chain or through the organization at the same level as the organization makes particularly drastic changes in order to sustain in this economy.
So that's where they reach out to companies like those that we have with us here today and figure out, say, you know, I've got limited resources, but I need to achieve X and I need these kind of people in order to help me do that. What's the recipe to make this actually work? Beth, let's talk about manpower and the value proposition that you provide to the marketplace. Why do companies hire manpower? When do they bring you in and say, we really need your assistance?
Well, there's a couple of reasons, and it depends on the company. You know, the most common reason is it gives them flexibility around the ebbs and flows of their business. So instead of rushing, especially in today's market, which is still somewhat fragile for sure, before they can make the work is there, the business is there, but before they make that commitment and spend the money on a full-time hire, going the contingent route or contract route gives them the flexibility to maintain and move around a variable workforce with the ebbs and flows. Interestingly enough, our perm business is really booming right now, and part of that is the whole skill gap talent mismatch. Again, businesses are hiring, business is starting to grow, and unfortunately, business has moved on and is not necessarily hiring the same talent they did 5 or 10 years ago. So they're having a difficult time tapping into any market, and the work is there and it's got to get done. In the absence of making that hire, it's a business interruption. There are other opportunity costs. So they may come to us and say, go find the talent, and we'll hire them directly to get that instant loyalty. So there's, you know, it just depends on what's going on inside that company economically and where they see their, where their, the vision is and where they see their 2 and 5 year plan. It also sometimes requires guts. You know, sometimes companies have to say, you know what, we're going to invest in our future. And Manpower did that. You know, we made a decision when during the recessions not to consciously over downsize, because when you do that and the economy comes back, you can't come back quick enough. So it's, you know, it's not one answer. It's kind of, it depends on the company. It's very unique. It's one to one.
It's so, Beth, question. In many of these situations, are the companies is the talent just not there within the organization? Mm-hmm. So is that the reason why they're having to look outside, or the talent is not up to par with the particular skill sets that's needed?
Yep. It's a combination of answers. So in some corporations, the talent really isn't there, that the company has grown and moved into a direction and they haven't kept, they and the employees themselves haven't kept their skill set where it needs to be. One of the things we heard a lot during the recession was, this is a time for us to go out and raise the bar. You know, employees had an opportunity during all of this to really shine, to say, I don't want to be the one to be let go, so I'm going to knock it out of the park. Unfortunately, many didn't see it that way and became complacent. So companies will go out, and we have seen it, right or wrong, to raise the bar and to replace the underperformers with top performers. And there's a couple other issues, depending on the skill set you're looking at, especially engineers and skilled trades. Because of our demographics, we have an aging population, and we have less people going into those areas. We don't have a workforce. We're running out of a workforce. So there you have an issue where people are just scrambling trying to find the talent. So it's again, it's a number of answers, and it's a complex issue to a lot of companies.
Wow. Well, it's difficult to figure out how to navigate the ebb and flow that comes with the economic times. Because during a boom, you feel like, oh, we've got plenty of money and we need to hire, hire, hire. There's so much work. And then, you know, invariably, there's going to be a contraction. So it's something that companies need to have a strategy in place of how they're going to manage that ebb and flow.
And I think the thing that we all have to remember is what you made an interesting comment, you know, when companies had plenty of money, most corporations will admit when that last recession hit, we were fat. We had way too much redundancy. We had way too many layers. There is a new norm. These companies will do more with less. So they have to have strong players and they have to have multipliers, people who can not only come in and just do job A, but A, B, and C. Not meaning we're heaping a lot of work on them, but they have to be able to multitask and see the bigger picture, because we're probably never going to go back to the staff payroll levels that we had in the past.
And that's a good thing, because I think most people in the workforce want to be contributing something that's really unique. They want to be adding value to the bottom line. Now, Rita, you're a talent acquisition and diversity executive. You've had a lot of experience in working with companies on how to really leverage the talent that you've grown up within the organization and figure out how to weather economic storms as well. What are your thoughts around what companies need to be doing now to be investing in their workers?
Well, I would say, Elizabeth, and thanks for having me here today, I would say that they have as much responsibility as the employees themselves. So the talent in the organization needs to understand that they own their career and they owe it to themselves to invest in what it takes for them to grow, in addition for the employer to do it. And it is in that give and take that I find a lot of disconnects. We understand the human capital. We don't seem to understand it as all together. We focus on the human sometimes, and we start looking for people because we want to be good employers and we want to be diverse. We forget that human is also a capital asset of the organization, and therefore we have to find those people who, as Beth mentioned, are able to be multidimensional. They need to be able to move career-wise sideways, not always upwards. And then we forget to invest in that capital to maintain it, which we do with our widgets, right? IT gets maintenance. Everybody else gets maintenance. Why not our human capital? And so I think that if companies need to look at something different, is how do we look holistically at the workforce of tomorrow? And instead of thinking backwards at retention and focus on single lines and silos of activities, think about how do we move people around and maximize their skills by seeing where they fit best.
And Rita, how would organizations do that best, knowing that there's such a focus a lot of times on a particular initiative at the moment, especially if you look at an organization that may have multiple lines of businesses? How would one be able to, in the management staff, be able to help that teammate maneuver through the organization in the right way?
First of all, I think all organizations need a more robust way to assess their talent and be very critical and very truthful to their talent. There are times in which you need to tell people you need to move on from this organization in order to grow. And we should have the courage as managers to do that. Others is the ability to take risks on our talent and be truthful about that risk for both the person that is going to be put in the position and you as the manager who takes a risk, and agree that if it doesn't work, you can get to a congenial parting or movement for that person, because it's not always out. It's always an opportunity for sideways, and that's where we forget that talent does not move always in a incline. It is not always up the hill. It's sideways too. I admire companies like General Electric, who challenge their talent to move every 2-3 years around and try different things, because it gives them a more wholesome group of people to foster their growth.
But Rita, don't you think we have failed employees to some degree? All our life, it was promotion meant up. Yes. I agree with you. Linear, up. It didn't mean sideways. Sideways meant you probably weren't doing a great job where you are. And I agree with you. I think that in the companies of today, promotion and your movement is more about how much you know across all lines. And they have to be able to go left and right. It's not always up. And wouldn't you say we have to do a better job of getting employees to understand that's a good thing going sideways sometimes?
Absolutely, Beth. And I think that what's missing in that equation is that in some industries, this is normal. For instance, I'm a lawyer by trade. Lawyers need to be able to function within a realm of activities of the firm and not necessarily all be conducting business in one silo. Otherwise, even the larger firms disappear. Just look at Dewey and what happened this Monday when they had to file for bankruptcy, 110 years old and now gone. I believe that sustainability for organizations is based on that. If you look at some of the most successful companies that have been around and are still around and innovating, they are predicated on the fact that talent moves sideways to get broad space of knowledge, understand the industries in which the company operate, because it's mostly not one single industry. There are very few organizations that are so focused that they only do one thing. And in order to grow that talent, it needs to go broad.
So in order for an individual working in organizations, they must really understand that they themselves are really entrepreneurs, sort of, that they have to be able to look at what's coming up, where the direction the organization and the industry is going in, and then prepare themselves for that next position. Even though that position could be a lateral move, it's nothing wrong with that lateral move. It's all about being sustainable.
It's a resume builder.
Yeah, I would agree also from the entrepreneurial standpoint. I think increasingly, as you see this new millennial generation beginning to enter the workforce, you're going to see more and more of that desire to have more entrepreneurial type of businesses. Mm-hmm. I think that this generation, more than probably generations in the past, wants to do something different. I think that's why you're seeing the explosion in social entrepreneurship. Every day people who've worked companies for decades in their lives are now coming out to become entrepreneurs because they want something more. I think a couple of things. You have some companies that have embraced growth like GE, and they are giving their employees an opportunity to branch out, do different things. And then you have some companies that aren't performing well that have been very constrictive on their employees. And so the reverse has happened. Some of those employees have decided to leave and go elsewhere. So I think it's a very tricky road we're going to be on, but definitely entrepreneurship is going to be definitely top.
Well, Kevin, if I may piggyback on what you just said, it's not necessarily that the millennials are looking at the world as more entrepreneurial. It's the necessity. Look at the unemployment in younger people. Yep. It because we have more boomers hanging on to their jobs now because of the recession, and that limits the opportunities for millennials. They get out there and they seek and develop their own opportunities. Mm-hmm. So it's that self assurance that I am responsible for me. Many, many years ago, I read a book about Me Inc. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone has read Bridges' book, right?
Yes.
And so I think it is important to understand that the lesson is old. It's our ability to recall it that needs to be constantly renewed.
Yes.
Good point.
Well, also, Kevin, you made a good point on entrepreneurship. So when in your other role as working with college students, what are some of the things that you talk to alumni members about in order to get them prepared and make sure they stay on course?
I think one of the biggest things that we try to talk to alumni and students about is just the aspect of mentorship. As an entrepreneur, there's nothing more valuable than talking with someone who's already walked down that road. I mean, that beats years of study, and it saves you a lot of mistakes. So I think mentorship is probably the top of the list that we talk about in terms of people being mentors, but really in terms of students not thinking they know everything and seeking out mentors. I think that it's important that they continue to develop themselves, yep. as we've mentioned, but, you know, they have to be well-rounded and not mm-hmm. necessarily pushed into those career tracks of a business school or a medical career or a legal career. They have to be well-rounded.
Very good. Very good. Mentorship is a very important aspect, but I think that also once we get into organizations, a lot of members forget about sponsorships as well. And those sponsorships happen to be areas that would give you that honest feedback, because they'll sit you down and say, well, Marilyn, listen, that's enough of that, and it's time for you to move to the next position or the next journey. Or, and by the way, here's something else that you possibly would be capable of inputting your skill sets within. So sponsorships, can you guys talk a little bit about that?
You know, I go back to the employee. I think that I look at the corporations we do business with, not the one I work within, but when I look at it from a macro view of all the different companies, some of them do that so well and so right, and they get that. But so many are forgetting about it. And I think that, again, back to Rita's point, as an employee, I own my career. And I think one of the best pieces of advice I could give a college grad, anybody in the workforce today, is to find that person. Find that person that you not only like and but respect, who will give you that honest feedback. Because you know, I'm not seeing it as much in the companies, them looking to come and say, oh, Marilyn, I want to be your sponsor. I think they do it. Here's the other gap I see. I think they do it with the obvious candidates. Excuse me. I think they that clear rising star. Mm-hmm. It's easy to find that yes. person, and everybody wants to sponsor you because you do well, I do well. What about everybody in between? It's sort of like our kids when they were in school. We all knew the top performers. We knew the kids that were really struggling. But what happened to the people in between? Excuse me. And I think that, employers, we need to be looking at job success profiles and where are we going to build who are we going to build our business around? Who are the multipliers that are going to take us where we need to be and seek those folks out? And that's a great point.
Are there particular skill sets that you see as a person starts to escalate in an organization that need to be strengthened in order to keep that upward climb or even make them more nimble for some of those sideways moves that you guys were talking about?
Well, I think that everyone talks about executive presence, and executive presence is one of those things that is very elusive, and some people think it's that gray suit or the great dress that you went and bought and wore to work, and it isn't. It's about what statement you make when you walk into a room. Do you own it? Are you able to hold your own? And I can tell you, one of the things that I've noticed, and this is throughout my career, a lot of time, as Beth says, people look at the superstars and they provide the feedback, etc. But some of the concerns and the reason why other people who may not be as obviously shining are not sponsored or mentored is because of litigation fear. I can tell you that
really?
Diversity, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow.
Diversity is an issue that has a double edge. And for all of the things that we say, and I'm right now in the quest of that elusive answer, why is it that we have had the Civil Rights Act in effect for 47 years, and we are still trying to make the business case for diversity in every organization?
Sorry. I agree.
And so I think it is because we fail to recognize that cultural competence requires that we look at people not with a blind eye to who they are. I find it offensive when people talk about, I am colorblind. If you are colorblind, gender blind, any blind.
Right, you try and not see that
exactly.
person. You're missing
you're
that
missing
person.
The point.
Exactly. Yeah. You're denying their humanity. And so I want you to see me as a woman, a Latina, with an accent and all of the things that come with me, right?
It's all part of the richness of you as an employee to an organization.
Right. It's what's going to make me feel included. It's what's going to make me feel comfortable and in a safe space where I can be myself and share all that I can. So if we're looking for productivity, let's focus on that and let's forget about the discrimination lawsuits and focus on what do we do things right for the person. And if people feel treated as individuals and respected, they're not going to sue you because you tell them, Marilyn, I think you need to grow this edge here or else you're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I think also adding on to that, I think another key skill set is just that interpersonal skills, those interpersonal skills, being able to network, communicate. And I think it also plays into some of the cultural awareness, you know, that you're talking about. I think the flip side of that is that, you know, everyone has to be comfortable communicating with other people. You know, regardless
Huge.
Of their race, gender, yep. ethnicity, what have you. But you have to be comfortable being yourself, but even more so comfortable communicating with other people just on an everyday level. I mean, beyond what's going on at the office or beyond business, but just having that openness to be able to understand and reach out and be informed on other people's cultures is huge in a workforce.
And I'd like to add on that. I mean, we literally put millions of people to work every day. And I come home and tell my kids every day crazy stories because I want them to understand. I have an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old that this isn't just a 20-year-old. It isn't just a man. It's not a woman. It's not a white. It's not a Latina. It's everybody in between. And I will tell you the most interesting thing in today's world, the majority of the reasons that people are coached or terminated is due to what he just said, a lack of soft skills, inability to communicate, inability to work in a team, inability to collaborate and innovate. Those are soft skills and you learn along the way. But if the communication is so key, and again, feeds into my big concern with all this social media and texting, you know, these kids coming up, I go into high schools and I say, you know, your inability to communicate will far outweigh your 4.0 GPA. And that, you know, getting into that C-suite and being sponsored and being mentored, those are the people we're seeking, because we can work with that. We could teach you the hard skill, but I can't teach you that, especially because, again, we just don't work.
Yeah.
We have families. We network. We belong to organizations. And everything I do outside is about my brand.
So social capital is just extremely important. From a social capital standpoint, not only your ability to network outside the organization, but within the organization is extremely crucial as well. How you say, how you present yourself, how you walk, as you say, stated, Rita, how you command the room, a presence in the room when you walk in.
Yep.
I do think that that goes lacking a lot. And it's not necessarily a skill we teach in college.
You all are talking about very like holistic and broad skill sets, which is very different than the traditional education system, which is specialized, which it's almost like now the education system might be out of sync with the changes and the dynamics going on in large organizations, or there needs to be a bridge built to make sure that we're really nurturing those coming into the workforce,
right,
so that they're prepared for a different environment than
right.
what we had 10 years ago.
Right.
Well, Elizabeth, I think that what's interesting about what you just said is that the education system has been out of sync with the
workforce,
workforce and the corporate environment for many years. And unfortunately, until we had the internet and now the younger generation is connected all the time, the challenges are much more obvious. Our kids are getting the education on the social graces that Beth and Kevin so well outlined before, about the ability to communicate, the ability to socialize, the ability to collaborate, to work in teams, etc. All of those things, they're acquiring them because of social media. Now, there's a concern in general about the fact that they're not talking, they're texting. I can tell you that my experience has been, and I have been observing this phenomenon now for about 8 years, because what I have seen happen with some of the young engineers that I used to nurture and now where they are today, it's miles and miles away. And they started texting each other and suddenly recognized that their boomer or Gen X or boss was not getting into that. And so I have to talk to these people, and eventually they're moving in that direction. And I find rewarding to see that they're showing us other ways in which they educate themselves, other ways in which they grow socially. And if we can learn from each other, then this society is going to continue to evolve in a very positive way. Like Kevin, I'm very hopeful for the future.
Right.
Thank you.
I think that what everyone has stated so far, a lot of things within organizations and not having the probably the talent, not necessarily the resources to help with this new change that we see ourselves, or new paradigm we see ourselves in, from a communication standpoint, as well as from a talent standpoint, as well as the education system. We can't do it all. The change has been so drastic, so fast, that it is truly probably more so incumbent upon the individuals to make sure that they gather the necessary skill sets that they need in order to be successful in whatever environment or whichever environment they choose to go within. So that is why from research we've seen a lot of particulars around those who make it to the top versus those who don't make it to the top. And not necessarily top being at the top of the CEO chain. The top meaning I'm at the top of my game. I'm where I want to be in the workspace, whether that be working for myself or working within an organization. Here I am. I reached a point of self-actualization, if we can go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Once you reach that point of I'm happy with everything that's happening within my space, I'm connected, I know that today I'm at X and tomorrow I could be at X as well, as long as I am doing and keeping and sustaining the skill sets that I need to remain competitive in the marketplace. Whether I'm working with Manpower, Axion, or any other opportunity or employer out there in the workspace, that's where we want people to get to.
I'm curious what the similarities and differences are between. We've got two women that have navigated to very high levels within very large organizations. Rita, Senior Vice President of Talent Acquisition and Compliance for SunTrust Banks. I mean, that's very high up in a very big company. And Manpower as well, Beth. And how you feel the skills that were necessary to get to where you are in your career compare and contrast to, say, an entrepreneur's skills. What do you think about that?
I have always felt that I am responsible for my space as an entrepreneur. So I own where I am, and I do all that I can to grow it and groom it. I also am a proponent of succession. So every time I take a job, I start scanning my team, and I look for who are the people I can groom to follow me. The sooner I can have them ready, the sooner I can move on to do more and exciting things. And so I operate as an entrepreneur within my own spaces.
Wonderful.
That's fascinating.
I think for me, there was a very I remember it being 24. I'm from Pittsburgh. I moved out to California. It was make or break time. I mean, my parents did not send me with a dime. Two suitcases. I was not making much. And I fell into a business that I loved. And I was an observer. I was very I'm lucky it happened this way. But I was very clear what I, you know, my parents were mill, generation of the mill and Depression era. And so I was very clear that I wanted to be successful. I wanted to, which meant, you know, position, title, money. And I wanted to and I wanted to learn how to get there. And I knew immediately I had a work ethic. And so I worked very, very hard. And that, I think, at the beginning of your career is key, that you're a hard worker. You're harder than most.
Right. You're willing to put in more than the average.
Right. And I always really wanted what was best for the company. I wanted the company to shine. I knew that if they shined, I shined. As I started to grow chronologically, I could see my own gaps. I looked at the people who were succeeding my age or a little bit older and moving forward, and I studied them and I thought, what is it they have that I don't? And I looked at the gaps and some of those, and I worked in my fear zone, consciously worked in my fear zone and said, I know I need to learn that skill. And I went to them. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, very different and unique. I mean, I'm a girl, grew up in Pittsburgh, blue collar, mill generation, but I went to them, as scary as it was. And I said, I want to learn how to do that, because I know if I don't know how to do that, I can't teach others. So again, it was a conscious thing for me. I've worked in my fear zone. I studied people who were successful. Again, loved Jack Welch, GE, read those books, took the pearls out, left the rest. And I just, I just moved, I think, very diligently forward. Again, never losing sight of being a hard worker, never doing anything halfway. I've just always had that philosophy, even personally. If you're not going to knock it out of the park, why bother? But I also, and again, then I will tell you, there was another epiphany in the last 5 to 7 years, and that was technology. You know, I made a joke of myself at how poor I was at technology. and then I realized, you know what, the joke's on you.
Mm-hmm. And if I don't jump on board.
Yeah, I realized. I mean, I was laughing my way through it, and I said, my God, if I don't learn how to do this. But it's also an efficiency thing for my job. But I realized, you know what, you're going to become, you might be great to have around, but you're going to become obsolete.
Exactly.
If you can't jump into this, Beth. And I turned the joke around on me, and I worked, again, in my fear zone. And I continue to do that. I just study people like Rita that I have a chance to sit on boards with. And it's, I think that's so important to kids today. And I say that to, I talk to college kids or or high school kids is, you know, seek out the people who are successful and do what you want to do or do what you do, and talk to them and get to know them and find out what the it factors are. I mean, we all can't be the same person, but, you know, what was the it factor for them, and kind of try and leverage that.
And if I could say here, the difference between what Beth said and I said, zero. She was just as entrepreneurial about her career and owning her space as I would have been. She used words like great work ethic, looking at people who are doing it best. Kevin said you can't go anywhere unless you have good mentors to shortcut all of the things you have to learn in order to be successful in a business. Wow. By golly, if Beth hadn't done that, I hadn't done that, and Marilyn and others, you know, you yourself, Elizabeth, what you're doing today is so different than radio was before. And right. So when
exactly.
you think exactly. So when you think about people who are making it and what is the it, the making it and it is very individualized, but it's owning
I agree.
Owning our space and what we do with it is what makes the difference.
And to be a lifelong learner, not to beat it into the ground. But, you know, and again, yes. I see this because, as I hate to admit, I am a boomer, and I have people coming in much younger
than me. Be proud. Come on.
Exactly. Be proud.
Own that. Own all of it.
But it is, you know, some of the things I learned along the way, you know, be a lifelong learner. Read. And, you know, I work with people, you know, when I had to tell staff in their performance reviews, this year, I want you to read 2 business books.
Not everybody thought that.
I want you to scrounge the Atlanta Business Chronicle every day. You need to be, when we have to be telling young people these types of things, there is a gap.
Yes.
You know, these are not, you know, and I'm not saying everybody, but that was really concerning to me when I took pause when I was writing some of our performance reviews this year, saying, you know, everybody wants to be at the top. You know, you don't hire anybody that says, you know, I wanted to go backwards. You know, they all want
right.
to come in and be the CEO.
I'd like to work
from
in
day
the
one.
Room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd like to work as little as possible,
now.
Make as much and be at the, yeah, exactly. And they all want to go somewhere, but what are you willing to do to get there?
Right.
And I'm not, you know, and it's, that's, again, shocking to me how many, you know, be a lifelong learner. You own it. I mean, I will give you access to everything, but I can't read the book for you.
And Beth, that is so, you are so correct there. I remember 8 years ago, going back to school and saying, you know, where the position I'm in now, this is going to end. This space, the area that I work in, is going to shrink rapidly based on conferences I was going to, based on information I was reading, looking at the investments, looking at the markets and how high they had reached, in particular for mutual funds and some of the equity funds, and said, wait a minute, something has to give. We're going to have a big change here. And I decided to go back to school. First, I got my master's, and then I said, hey, wait a minute, can't stop there. Might as well continue, because I, you know, I need to know the foundations. I'm not saying that everyone needs to go through a master's and then a PhD, but for me, it really helped me to create a different space
yep.
for my next avenue of growth, and to be able to reach back and give to still to those individuals in business, as well as those coming through college, to say, here's a formula that
right.
may work for you.
Right.
And the reality is that is all about working hard and also smart, because you recognize, A, the industry is giving me some signals.
Mm-hmm.
And as Beth says, if I have to tell you to read the Chronicle in order to know what's happening in business, you're already running behind the ball.
Exactly.
And so it's being perceptive enough to know that the world is changing every day. And as it is changing, it is incumbent upon us to put the effort and be smart enough about how do we pick and choose all of the information that's of access to us,
right.
and we leverage it then to make our life better.
I think also we're in a very interesting time now, probably more than ever. You know, you have a lot of examples of entrepreneurs who have not done it the traditional way. You know, so they didn't have an MBA. They didn't have an advanced degree. They did just graduate from high school and start a skateboard company and become a multimillionaire. You know, they did do it by, you know, putting an energy drink in a bottle and selling a gazillion.
They did it in their dorm room
at
Harvard.
Did it in their dorm room at Harvard, exactly.
Right.
So
in public.
In public, right. So I think it's kind of an interesting dichotomy in that, you know, we still need to have those skills. But I think what some of the younger people are drawn on is that, you know, you can't say now, well, if you don't, well, if all you do is sit around and play with water bottles, you're never going to do anything. Well, that's not really true. I could be, you know, on TV. I could have an internet game. Yep. I think we have to find new ways to really, you know, interest those young people and make them see the mm-hmm. relevance of what we need to do and what they need to do. So.
As Beth said, I'm sorry, Elizabeth said initially, is education. How is education going to change to be different? And if you Google on the internet, there are lots of free universities, literally free universities out there that are providing people information and opportunities to gain the skills and the strengths they need in terms of basic quantitative information and be able to then capitalize on that to get degrees. So I know that there are at least two that are now looking for accreditation, which
wow,
I found
that's
fabulous.
Great.
Well, there is so much information out there today. What I've heard from each of you is that the success comes from the people that have that curiosity factor, that they get an idea or they get fascinated with some piece of whether it is how do I build a career within this company or how do I invent the next product as an entrepreneur. And they're so fascinated and curious that they just keep asking those
yep.
questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't let it go until they get more and more answers. Marilyn, when you're working with organizations that want to bring up people within their company, is that part of what you help them identify? Is how can we make our people curious about success and more curious about what's going on internally in this company so that they'll continue to innovate and be entrepreneurial in our organization?
That's absolutely correct, Beth, as well as those individuals that look at the equation and say, you know what, there's something else better for me somewhere else. Let me leave this. So you don't have necessarily, I have to tell you as a manager, it's time to go. You understand where your space is.
And by being aware, that was the other thing.
Right.
No, you can't just assume that once you get a job, you can just show up every day and everything will continue status quo. Mm-hmm. It's a very dynamic environment today. You got to every
yeah.
day show up and say, what's changed?
And
what's
changed the
world, and what can I do about it?
The world of work has changed so drastically at lightning speed and will continue. And that's what I think kids coming out of college need to realize. I think that's what some incumbent employees need to realize, is that the world of work has changed. And most big companies, much like Rita's, mine, the GEs of the world, and even entrepreneurial people understand this, it's all about continuous improvement. Driving efficiency, driving productivity, driving ROI, which means you have to companies are constantly going to be looking at what do we need to stop doing, start doing, or continue doing to be the best we can be. And so that really has rocked a lot of people's worlds. You know, I always use my dad as an example. Worked in a steel mill in Pittsburgh for 45 years. He had the exact same job with the day he retired that he had day one. The exact same job. That is not going to happen
ever
again.
No, never.
And you know, and yet it is amazing to me. Again, I'm looking at world through a much more macro perspective because I deal with so many different companies and so many different candidates. And one of the big complaints from candidates is my job changed. I was hired to do X, but they were asking me to do Y and Z as well. And instead of seeing it as an opportunity to grow and, you know, and morph yourself. And again, not all, but we find ourselves doing a lot of that counseling to candidates that, you know, that's about growing. That's a resume builder. And the people who do that are the people who are going to shine and grow, get sponsored,
mm-hmm.
and move within that organization to the level of what you consider success.
Well, it's yeah. just seizing the moment, too.
Right.
I think that we, again, in the education system, if you look at our teachers, They begin their careers and end their careers pretty much where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And even mm-hmm. within wow. higher level academia, our academics begin their career where they are. And if they get a chair for a department or something of the sort, but they're
wow.
still doing basically the same work. So they look at the world in a very siloed
that's
way.
Good point.
And that's why the education needs to change. And that's why I think this nimbleness of the universities online, it's going to take on because they are delivering education in a very different way.
Right. But how are companies going to view education online?
They'll have no choice. it's do or die. There's a very interesting book, and I can't think of the name of it, but the author is Peter Capelli, C-A-P-P-E-L-L-I. He's in the Wharton School of Business, and he is in the HR space recognized as someone with an incredible acuity about what the future is going to look like. And the reason for it is because he looks at the lessons of the past and is putting them within the context of today. Mm-hmm. And he will tell you that professorships are dinosaurs that are going to disappear.
Well, I can say from experience in both the business as well as teaching that a lot of the MBA students that come through my classroom are like, sit there. I mean, I have hours with them, and they're just like stunned at some of the things that I say that complement the text, or doesn't complement the text necessarily, because we know that it takes time to write a book, and then it takes time to review the book, and then by the time we publish the book, it's about 2 years old. On the other end of this spectrum, we know that change happens as we sleep.
Right.
So by tomorrow, there's a new gadget or something else that helps us to acquire additional knowledge,
right,
which leads us to why we have such change. Now, people are more knowledgeable about the possibilities of what could be. Therefore, in the past, I wasn't as knowledgeable about what I could use, take $30,000 salary for example, and how I can make that grow. Now, people know I can have $30,000 and I can make that, I can turn that over 10 times if I want to, based on various factors, based on knowledge I have, based on how I invest, based on what I decide to do mm-hmm. with that $30,000. Whereas before, people thought, I must work at this company in order to have residual income at age of retirement. No more do people, young people especially, millennials, as well as Generation Y and X, a lot of Generation X as well, they know that if I'm to make it, if I'm to have a sustainable living in my future, then I have to control that. I have to control it from a way, from a financial aspect of things, as well as a knowledge base, as well as knowing what's next for my future and mm-hmm. how I gravitate back towards that. Now, back to college and university, when those kids are in the MBA course, and I teach strategy, one of the courses I teach is business strategy, they recognize that if I try a particular method, say brown marketing, and I'm using Porter's 5 steps to profitability or to making a sale of something, that I still have to use those 5 steps in my own individual world in order to make that work. A lot of times as well, we learn that if I'm just a college professor in the past, if I was just a college professor, I wouldn't know how to necessarily implement that in a business environment. Of today, because I haven't been there. As you stated, Rita, I may have just worked as a teacher. Now, I say all that to say this. The challenge then becomes for the instructors, for the professors, as well as for the business people. A lot of companies you work with or people work in, as well as educational institutions, don't believe that a person can do more than one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the challenge comes in.
Correct. And I think that what's interesting about that comment that you just made, Marilyn, is the fact that even within academia, there's been a change afoot that has shown that they realize they cannot be always the same thing. How many of you have not seen, A, visiting professors like Marilyn, B, in every program out there, and B, and most important, the traditional academics are now not being asked as much to write as to consult. So they are becoming consultants to businesses mm-hmm. because it brings them to a practical execution of all their theories, and it provides then that catalyst to say, and by the way, it worked when we wrote this book 10 years ago. But it's not working today
exactly.
because we just tried it with a company.
Right. right. All good ideas need to bump up against mm-hmm. reality
yes.
every once in a while to make sure they still make
definitely.
Sense.
Definitely.
Yes.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Good People Show, and we're having a great discussion with Dr. Marilyn Carroll of KSAP 5i, Beth Herman, Regional Director of Manpower, Rita
Izaguirre,
thank you, Talent Acquisition and Diversity Executive, and Kevin McGee, President of Morehouse College Alumni. Folks, I've got a really exciting news announcement that I've saved to the end of the show, and that is that with the popularity of our Good People Show, and because, as you can tell, we've been having a fascinating conversation about career advancement, Business Radio X has decided to launch another show, and it's going to be hosted by Dr. Marilyn Carroll. Marilyn has been come a favorite guest of our Business Radio X show. She's been a frequent guest on several of our shows over the last couple of weeks and clearly an expert in her field. So Marilyn, Career Advancement Radio is going to launch June 11th.
Yes, Elizabeth, and we are so excited. And just as we've had here today, our wonderful guests around the table, we plan to have the same thing going forward at our shows, including HR organizations, as well as professional organizations, alumni, MBA associations, for example, technical groups, engineering groups, law groups, you name the gamut, we are going to cover it. We really want people to hear the message that you guys have so eloquently discussed here today about owning your career and how you go about doing that, and as well as in their particular spaces and what they want to do with it.
Very exciting. So make sure that you tune in Mondays at 11:30 Eastern Time and listen to Career Advancement Radio for more great career advancement discussion. Thanks to all of my wonderful guests today. I want to make sure that our listeners can get in touch with all of you if they have additional questions or want to get involved with your organizations, hire you for all of your great expertise and advice. Marilyn, let's start with your website and then we'll go around the table.
You can reach me at ksap5i.com, and that's ksap5i.com, or you can contact me at 404-375-8487.
Fantastic. And you can also check out Dr. Marilyn on Twitter as well, where we'll be leading up to the launch of the big show on June 11th and weekly feeds on all the great guests that will be joining us on Career Advancement Radio. Beth Herman, Manpower, how can folks get in touch with you guys if they're interested in hiring you and partnering with you as
and
part
I hope
of their
they
team?
Are. Well, they can access our main website for a plethora of wonderful thought leadership pieces that talks a lot about the world of work at us.manpower.com. Here locally, anyone that is looking for work should visit us at manpowerjobs.com. And then the easiest route to any of it is to call me directly, Beth Herman. You can follow me on Twitter as well, or you can call me at 404-256-6988. And people are hiring like crazy. We're looking for top talent.
That's great to hear. All right. Get on it, folks. And Rita Izaguirre.
You
I got
said it.
It. Rita Izaguirre, where can we get in touch with you?
Well, for now, rita.izaguirre@gmail.com and 404-805-1295.
Excellent. And we will post links to all of this with the podcast for the show, folks. So don't worry about that. And Kevin, last but certainly not least, you've got a couple of different organizations that people might want to reach out and get in touch with.
So for entrepreneurs interested in finding out more about access to capital for entrepreneurs, you can reach me at McGee, M-C-G-E-E, at aceloans.org. And for those interested in mentorship opportunities with African Americans or in more information about Morehouse College Alumni Association, you can reach me at kevin.mcgee@morehousealumni.com. And thank you for having us here today, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Another great show. Yes. Thanks for helping me host here, Marilyn. And I can't wait to tune into Career Advancement Radio on June 11th. So we'll all be looking forward to that.
We're excited.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. This is Elizabeth Gordon for Business Radio X, and we will be talking to you soon.